The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 213. Today is February 5th. We're starting to get into the meat, if you will, of the road racing season. My name is Jim Race, and I'm sort of here by myself this week. And there's a few things that we're going to talk about. I just want to run real quick because we've got some great interviews coming up. We've got one coming up with Chaz Davis. We've got one coming up that's really special I just did today with Maria Costello, who is a real roads and short circuit racer from, you'll hear it. You'll figure it out. But we also had testing in Sepang today. And Sepang's kind of unique in a lot of ways. And it was cool. And the usual suspects, well, some of them were at the front. We had Valentino Rossi, fastest. Wow, big surprise. Casey Stoner. Third up was Colin Edwards. That was neat. And he wasn't in fifth, which is pretty cool. Loris Caparossi, who is frankly the perennial perfect preseason tester. It's always fun. Fifth, Jorge Lorenzo, Dovizioso, Nicky Hayden. All the way down eighth, Danny Pedrosa. Ben Spies in 12th. There's some people that are, you know, going eh about that. And it's like, dude, you know, day one. How many points do you win in a in a day one test, you know? And Sepang is, frankly, kind of an unusual track. So, I'm really looking forward to the next couple of days. It's a three-day test. The pictures that have come out so far, and you can see a whole bunch of those at Ride On 2, are excellent. The interviews that I've done with both Chaz and Maria are well worth listening to. So, you know, walk through that, and I'll roll those on, and you guys tell me what you think. Hello, this is Jim Race for MotoGPOD, and I have on the line with me, and I always start it out that way, don't I, but a gentleman named Chaz Davis from Wales and a rider and going to be a permanent rider this year on the Factory Triumph team. How are you doing, Chaz?
I'm very well, thank you, Jim.
Looking for, you know, you just came off a test, and I was actually going to save this for the end, but let's talk about Portimao a bit. That's a track you got to race at last year, and it's a very interesting track. But I will say I warned you about the weather. Tell me about the test.
The test was good. We didn't have a great deal to test. You can always find plenty of chassis stuff to go over, but in terms of new things, there wasn't really anything. So it was just a case of throwing different kind of directions of setup at the bike and seeing if it worked and seeing what it did and what it made worse, just for a reference point, even if we never use our setting again, just during the season for reference. It was good. It was I got to ride a little bit in the rain, which was handy. Didn't ride too much, and then obviously patchy conditions. So we had a little bit of everything. Not quite enough dry time, but it wasn't a bad test. In the end, the last day I wasn't overly happy, but the first 2 days were okay.
Yeah, you had the dreaded dry wet conditions, which no racer ever wants, because it's like, you know, trying to find a line. And is it going to be wet in that corner next time or not? I mean, you got to hate that.
Yeah, it's just, you know, one of them things. It's boring, really.
Yeah.
You're just waiting for it to dry, and then there's patchy parts of track. I thought, you know, I think it must have been Saturday afternoon, the second session. We had two sessions a day. And Saturday afternoon, the track was drying. It was chilly, but it was drying. There was a bit of wind about. But then there was one big patch going into the, I think, turn five. Just wet, and then wet through there. So I went out on wet, did a lap, and then just sat down for half an hour and just said, look, there's no point in going out now as it is. And then even when I went back out, there was still streams across the track there. Last course ended up crashing there. So I think most of us sat it out and then just went out with about half an hour to go. You know, there's no point in taking stupid risks in that sort of conditions. You know, there's nothing to prove. So just wait till the conditions come good and then make the best use of the what limited time that you do have at the end of the session.
What do you think of the track? I mean, you've had some good time on it now. It really is a fantastic course, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's a great circuit. It's you know, one of the most kind of diverse circuits and layouts in the world. It's got a little bit of everything in it. You know, it's really, really difficult to kind of figure out. The first day, everybody ends up a little bit lost, but you know, as always, when you sleep on it, it always comes good.
But, go ahead.
Yeah, as a circuit, it's definitely up there as one of the best in the world.
I got the team press release this morning, and there was a picture of each of the four of you now, because there's four guys on the team. And that was kind of weird because, you know, the original press release had, you know, the teammates lined up, and then it sounds like things got shuffled around. Can you tell me anything about that?
Not really.
Okay.
It was weird. It was, you know, there was that press release in early January, maybe the 5th or 6th or something like that, maybe a bit later.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, that was a triumph press release about it. Myself and Gary were good to go. And I knew at the end of last year there were talks about running a team alongside us, running two efforts out there. But then I just thought, when I saw the release, I just thought, you know, that must just be us two. And then all of a sudden I heard of a couple of people that looks like Gary might not be part of the team. And then it just kind of changed really quickly. And, you know, I didn't really expect it either. It was quite strange, but, you know, that's how it is now.
That is indeed how it is now, and it's as Eugene and I were talking about last week, it's like the entire economic spectrum of professional road racing has changed, and it's like kind of hard to keep up. So people to get rides, damn it, you know, frankly, good on them. Let's go back to last year, not too far. Because on the Triumph, when you got your postseason ride on it, you were hot out of the box right away. I mean, Imola was like, whoa.
Yeah, well, Imola was, well, obviously my best result. I'm pretty confident I could have backed that up in Magny-Cours. I was not so hot in qualifying there. I actually ended up crashing at the end of qualifying, but my race pace was really good, but unfortunately we didn't finish that one. Imola, going back to that, it was kind of like the first half of the race didn't get a good start and just kind of got shuffled back. I think I was with Pitt.
Yeah.
I was with Pitt in maybe seventh, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
On the restart then, I just got with the right people. And it just makes all the difference. Got a good start, got away with them, and just sat in there. And kind of, I think, who was going off at the front? I think it might have been Sofuoglu.
I think so.
I think he was going off, but then, you know, I was with Eugene and Cal was there for a couple of laps until he ended up crashing. And but no, it was good. That was a really good race. Surprised a lot of people. Surprised myself a little bit, to be honest. And then after that, we had Magny-Cours, and that was going decent. And then Portimao struggled a little bit. Just little things throughout the weekend. It doesn't seem to be my, I don't know, I don't seem to be quite as strong there as I would like, but I'm working on it.
The funny thing about Magny-Cours was that entire race went by with the Eurosport boys calling you Gary McCoy.
Yeah. that was Imola, I think.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, Imola. The numbers were just too close, and, you know.
The only real giveaway was obviously the Monster helmet versus, you know, the standard design.
So you're running number 7 this year?
I am, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, you'll stand out then. They're all different enough that when I saw the pictures, which were included in the press release, I'm like, okay, I can recognize that from a distance. Pull me back to your earlier career, because I know that you did 250 GPs for a while, but I know nothing beyond that. Fill me in on those early days.
Well, the very, very early days, I think I was maybe 6 or 7 when I first got on a motorcycle. I was a little bit younger than that when I first got on one, but really properly was about 7, I think. I had a big accident on a go-kart when I was 7, and ended up putting myself in hospital for a month. So after I recovered from that and got a bit stronger, I for some reason got on 2 wheels. And so after that, did mini bikes for I think until I was up to like 12, 13, and that's mini motos, and just raced that, won the British Championship 3 times, and then did a little bit of ATCC racing with the kind of junior, they call it a Junior Road Race Association. And there was a couple of us then, there was me and Camia and a couple of others then, and then got onto the Aprilia Cup, the 125 CC Cup. I think you had that in America as well. Well, you had the 250 at least.
Yep, we had
I know
the
that.
250.
And so I did that for 2 seasons, mixed in with a little bit of proper 125 racing, so on GP bikes in the British Championship. So I did that for a little bit. I got second in the championship my second year. And then after that, went to the Spanish Championship. Did a full season there in between the British Championship in 2001. That was
The Spanish Championship is a perfect place to cut your teeth, because there it's a no holds barred area, if you will.
No, it's basically you're running it pretty much. The guys who are winning there are usually guys who are finishing the top 5, top 10 of a 125 GT. So
yeah.
It's good experience, and it just takes you to that next level. When let's see, we were on a big team that year. There was me, Casey, Camia, a German guy. There was Lascourt, actually, was there. My teammate now, David Salom. Who else is there? There's two others. Oh, yeah, Julian Simon, the 125 world champion. And a guy called Jordi Torres, who's a Spanish. I think he still runs Spanish. And so that was a big team, there's 8 of us, and it was a lot of competition within the cup, let alone the rest of the guys. So it just raises your level to the next level, pretty much. And when we went back to the British Championship, it just started getting easier, and we were all getting faster naturally.
So how did you end up coming to the States with Barry Gilson and the Celtic team?
After the Spanish Championship there, I did one season 125, which was a disaster, in GPs that was, and then moved to 250 as I was pretty tall, so I had to go up, and had 3 good seasons there. And then the start of my 4th season, it was supposed to be on a semi-factory bike. The money didn't come, but I had to pay a pretty to get the bike, so I think I got 3 races in, and then was kind of got my team kind of folded, and then Jeremy McWilliams mentioned my name to Barry, said that I wasn't doing anything. So Barry threw me a bit of a lifeline and asked if I wanted to come over, and I wasn't sure. I wasn't doing anything, but I wasn't really sure about going to AMA. I'd heard things about dangerous tracks and nothing really about the series, just dangerous tracks and that sort of thing. Anyway, I ended up doing it, so why not? I've got nothing else to do. So I'm getting a 4-stroke. And so that's how I landed there. It was just by pure kind of coincidence and luck. That's how I got there.
And that was kind of an interesting in for you, because you had success pretty much straight away on that bike, even though it's kind of a remote satellite effort. And, it's great that Barry does that. And he actually focuses on riders from back home, because it's nice to see you guys come over and do well. And he always has, underfunded perhaps, but always puts together a decent package. And then you stepped on the attack team, where you won, you know, what is a relatively major race, even though, you know, it's, these days it's got some controversy, but you picked up a Daytona 200 win. How did that feel?
Well, at the time, it was, you know, the circumstances, it was very strange.
Sure.
I felt like everything that I did in the build-up to Daytona and, you know, the way things were going up to it, I felt it was my race to lose kind of thing.
Sure.
And then the first 10 laps of the race, I was pretty much, you know, out of contention. We had a rear sprocket carrier breakup and a couple of other issues as well. And that was basically the end of my race. I think I was sixth on the first pit stop, and I kind of just set my head on getting a top five for the day. And ended up that I put my head down, kind of went with a no-pressure attitude, just kind of rode, if I crash, I don't care, I'm in fifth. And put some good laps in, and I think I passed Rath, pulled away from him for third, and then Neil, I was closing on him. We were same, he was doing good times as well. And he blew up, and then obviously everyone knows what happened to Josh, and he got disqualified. And, you know, that was probably the biggest shock of my life around the gym table. So that was, a strange way to win it, not the way I want to win it, but
sure.
Sometimes it goes like that, and I'm on that list.
So the vast majority of our listeners, even though I'm from California, are overseas, and kind of really have no idea what it is like to circulate at Daytona, and it really is unlike any. You know, it's literally if you take, you know, the old school track at Monza. And you open it back up again. Tell me about the high banks, because that is the thing that is probably so weird about it.
Yeah, Daytona is an experience in itself. I don't know if they do track days there, but it's probably something that everybody should do at least once. And I remember the first time I went there with Barry, it was sort of I spent a bit of time on the kind of middle to three quarters of the way up the banking.
Yeah.
And up the bank, and, you know, there's some dashed white lines. And then you've got about a meter and a half, probably 5 feet, in between that line and the wall. I mean, the wall's not that dangerous, but you've got to try and get as close as you can to it. So you make it a little bit dangerous. But, you know, the first time I was there, I was kind of messing around middle to three quarters of the way up. I was happy enough there. And then I thought, all right, it's about time you start going up there. Apparently that's the way they do it. And so I started going up, and I think I did one run at it and didn't get up. Then the next lap sort of stuffed this, so I started right up there. Started off, as soon as I come out of that chicane, I went up to the very top. But I caught the white line on the way up, so it spun up. and then I was kind of aiming at the wall anyway. I got out of it, so it was all okay, but it's pretty scary. But then since then, it's something, you know, that you don't really get anywhere else, especially when you get three quarters of the way around the bank and then start and drop down, and there's a lot of pull. You get a bruised chest at the end of the weekend from a little bit of banging on the tank.
Yeah.
You know, you get pebbles, the banking, where the banking sort of breaks up a little bit, there's little pebbles that smack you on the finger at 200 mile an hour, which will really hurt.
Yeah.
And shoulders and biceps and everything, you know. And it's all the Daytona experience. It's good.
How much, you know, the thousands have always had an issue with this, but how much would the 600 spin up when you were getting close to top speed?
They don't really.
Yeah.
No, the 600s don't spin up around this. They move around a little bit, but yeah. Unless you, like I said, that white line, that when that spun up, I went across that, it was kind of just as the sun was getting over that banking. So there's still a little bit of dew on the ground.
Yeah.
And it's sitting on that white line, so that's why I spun up that one time. But the 600s really don't spin around there. But I know the thousands do, or they used to at least.
I think the funnest part about Daytona, and especially, you know, and I want to keep going on about this, but is the drafting opportunities you get heading into one, if you're in a pack.
Yeah.
That is just incredibly fun to watch, and it's probably one of the places where, you know, drafting is, you know, it's key. It makes makes all the difference in the world, and races are won and lost from that. You know, clearly, you come out of the chicane, and you probably don't want to be in front if it's a white flag lap.
No, definitely not. It's the draft in there just plays such a big part of it. And like this year, for example, we went there with a bog standard, the Aprilia Mille road bike, and I think that I was kind of about a second and a half off. It was the first weekend, everything was a bit fresh, and I think I ended up finishing sixth or seventh. But I got the fastest lap of the race with about five laps to go because the pace car was out, and then there's a few riders around, and I just banked from one to the other all the way along both bankings.
Yep.
And got the fastest lap by a few tenths, and there, you know, there's no way that should have happened, but that's the difference it makes. It must have pulled me a second. I felt like I was on a 1,000 going into turn one. I had to brake about 50 meters earlier.
Yeah, and that's a good segue. So you spent last season running on the KWS Millennium Technologies RSV 1000 with, what I guess, Rocky Stargell, Jimmy Lee, and Chip at the helm, guiding you along in the Daytona Sport Bike Championship with AMA. But it was one of those years where everybody was just waiting for you to take a win. And it didn't come. And it was really frustrating for those of us, and frankly, I am a fan. I'm a fan of I was a fan, you know, I'm a fan of that class. I wasn't a fan of the series. I'll put it that way. But how did your year go last year?
It was good. When you start out on a 10-year-old bike, you don't have expectations. So
sure.
That was kind of the, you know, there was no pressure, no expectation. It's just thought, well, you know, it is what it is. Let's get on with it and see how we do. And you know, looked to Brighton things for 2010, which was, you know, the propositions of getting on the RSV4.
Mm-hmm.
So we went testing a few times, or a couple of times, once actually, properly testing. But then we, in the early part of the season, we were a good bit away. It was just little things like the bike came with a 6-inch rear wheel, half an inch too big, really. Just flattens out the tire and spins like crazy. No grip, very slow to change direction. So little stuff like that took two races for us to learn that, and then to get the wheels cut down, I think, by the third race. And then we were in contention pretty well. And then we took another step with electronics. It was good because the team, you know, they pretty much did everything that we could throughout the year. It was, and then we got the electronics and I put it on the box the first time at Laguna.
Mm-hmm. Which was an outstanding race. I mean, that was just kick-ass.
Yeah, it was a really good race. And after that, we just had a ton of races. There was Mid-Ohio went okay. We weren't particularly strong there. But we had, you know, bad luck in, I think, three straight weekends. And then the final weekend of the year, I think it was second in the first race, leading the last race, starting to pull away a tiny bit, and, you know, got a little bit too heavy-handed on the brake and tucked the front. So, but anyway, I think we can be proud of what we did to bring a 10-year-old bike up to the front of the championship was pretty good. So if the season started again tomorrow, I think we'd be in very good shape to actually win it. So it was good. I really enjoyed it as well. It was an enjoyable season.
Well,
it's nice being kind of underdogs.
Yeah, no doubt. There's a lot of people that, you know, there's a whole lot of sniping going on about, you know, the 1125, and everybody's kind of being quiet about the RSV, but the bikes were, they all have their own faults. And the thing about that, and Chip and I just talked about in depth a bit ago, was that the, and this is so strange, but the Miele actually sort of needed to be ridden like a 250 GP bike. You had to carry corner speed because you didn't have anything to get out of the corners with.
Not really, no. Like you said, there's a lot of sniping over the 1125, and there wasn't a lot over ours, but that's simply because we didn't really have an advantage in many places.
Sure.
We had a bit of speed, especially once we got up to top speed. It was for sure the quickest thing on the tracks.
Right.
But that was the only, well, a lot of the AMA tracks, you're hardly getting into the top. But the chassis was actually very good on it. I was impressed by the chassis. There was, in the early races, I was riding around the outside of a couple of people. They got theirs styled a bit later on. But yeah, it was strong bits to the bike. Definitely very strong bits to the bike. You did have to ride it a little bit like a 250. But I don't think that was the only way that it could be ridden. There was a couple of things as well, which I think with a couple of tests would have really helped out. We had a little bit of an engine braking inconsistency. I wouldn't call it an issue. It was a little bit of inconsistency, which I think we could have dialed it out a lot better with a test. But it's quite an impressive bike, really, for 10 years old.
And if I remember back, you were having either some clutch or shifter problems at some point that kind of recurred.
Yeah, we had a couple of problems. There was just a couple of things, just niggly things, which really hampered us throughout the season.
Yeah.
And they were just niggly things. It was nobody's fault. It was kind of something that you couldn't foresee, but it happened. So there you go.
So, one of the things that sticks in my mind is that you have been on a vast array of bikes in your racing career. And the one that really pops into my head was your instant recruitment at Laguna Seca to ride for Pramac Dantin. I mean, that must have been one of the more weird, surreal points in your life.
Yeah, that was odd. It just came out of the blue. I knew Hoffman was injured in the morning. I think I was just sat with Barry. We were just sat on outside, his canopy. I was riding for Barry at that time at Celtic. And next thing, one of the guys, Felix, who I remember
Yeah.
from back then, he said, do you want to come and ride it? He's rushing me. He's like pushing me and pushing me. I looked at Barry and I'm like, oh, it's your call. I'm your rider. Am I
Yeah.
allowed to ride this? And he was, obviously right up for it. He wanted to see me. So that was it. I was in the leathers 10 minutes later and out on the track 20 minutes later. So that was pretty wild. It was a really strange weekend, but it was good fun. It was a good opportunity, and enjoyed it.
And you, if I remember correctly, you tossed on a pair of Alex's leathers with his name taped off.
Yeah, that's it. Luckily, me and Alex are a pretty similar size, so got straight in his leathers and out on the track, and that was it. I missed the first session on Friday morning, and that was it.
And you actually just said something which is interesting. You're pretty tall. How tall are you?
About 6 foot, about
Okay.
182 centimeters, something like that.
Okay, so you've kind of outgrown a fair amount of bikes. How do you fit on the triple?
Not bad, yeah. Once I get tucked in, I have to kind of push myself up on the seat a little bit to
Okay.
get the elbows in. But that's second nature to me because I've been doing that since I was 14 years old. So it's not really a big deal. But I fit on the bike quite well. Like I said, I've outgrown a lot of different bikes. But the triple actually fits me quite well, so that's okay.
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting for, there's kind of a question about, where Bradley Smith, who is growing like a weed, is going to end up. We know he's running 125s next year, but I almost want him to go to Moto 2 so he's got a little bit more room to stretch out, if you will. So let's talk about this coming year, because For you, it must be pretty exciting. And you know, a really good thing about it is that you're going to have a whole bunch of friends in the paddock, and that must be exciting for you.
Yeah, kind of. It's there's a lot of people that I know there. There's a, a few of the boys that I used to hang out with a few years ago. But unfortunately, a few of the friends are actually competitors this year, so.
I mean,
Which
that's okay, but I mean, it seems like the Brit contingent tends to at least be able to laugh along with each other when they're not on the track.
there's so many of us. I mean, we had that photo shoot the other day.
I know, I
And
saw that. There's a video, I think I put it up, that is just hilarious because you guys could not pull it together at the end.
when we were walking.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was because the toes and the shoulder pads getting in everybody's way. It was good fun. They're all a good bunch of guys. There's obviously seven superbike riders, and there's actually three super sport riders, but Gina Ray wasn't there. So
Yeah.
there's all of us lot, and they're a decent bunch of guys. We all get on with all of them, and yeah, it should be a fun season, I think.
Yeah, I think Gino signed yesterday, so that'll be great to have him locked in. It's just too bad that he didn't, have a chance to do the test, but I think he's going to be at PI shortly. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty much they've taken over. You guys have taken over, and from the
Pretty much.
top to the bottom of the island. And if champ, if you could. If you think about it, you guys could pretty much sweep that championship, no problem. It's going to be one person or another, I know it.
Yeah, that's. I think the chances are pretty good. What is it, like 40% British in Superbike? So I
Yeah.
think the chances are pretty good.
Yeah, I mean it's top guys. And yeah, you're racing against these guys, but it seems like that you guys have enough of an attitude when you get off track to still have a friendship, which I find remarkable because sometimes when you fight that hard, people aren't able to put that aside. But I think you'll do fine.
Yeah, well, not everybody adopts the Mladin approach. People go about racing differently, and that's not the only way to win races, I don't think. You don't have to hate your rival to beat them. So, Eugene is, a competitor this year, and I've known him. I knew him before he even started racing, and we've always got along very well. His brother goes out with my sister.
Yeah.
So, there's, we're rivals on track and, friends off it. And that doesn't affect how quickly or how hard I'm going to try around the track just because, he's out there as well. So, I think all the superbike guys as well, they get on pretty well. There's obviously a lot of competition between them. There's a lot of competition between anybody, but it's all fought out on the track, and I don't think there's too much hatred.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And when I was talking to Eugene last week, and I talked, I remember talking to him post Imola, and but when I was talking to him last week, he's like, "It is going to be weird racing Chaz because he's going to be somebody that's going to be up at front challenging for the box, and I've known him for so long." But I think that's cool. I mean, it's when people that are friendly race. It doesn't mean that you don't go hammer and tong. You're still racers at heart. But the good part is, at the end of the day, if you both come home in one piece and had a good battle, it's very cool to be able to walk up to somebody, shake their hand, pat them on the back, and have a pint with them later.
Yeah, no, it's I don't think it shouldn't have to be the other way.
Yeah.
Not to say that there shouldn't be a big competitive streak in everybody, because there is everybody out there is really competitive, and so yeah, I think that you race on the track, and if somebody else beats you, then fair play, or if you beat them, then same goes. So yeah, it's going to be good.
Sure. Okay. My final question, and this is stolen from, I think, a tweet you made. Tell me about the mouse in your flat.
Oh, don't talk to me about that thing. That's a serious issue at the minute. I've just come home from Hereford, the local town, and just come home, and I'm actually looking at getting one of them not a proper razor, but the ones which have got the circulating blades on them.
Oh, shit.
So, anyway, I'm looking for some parts that I've got for that. I've gone under my sink, and I keep my vitamins and everything under there, and this mouse has just chomped his way through all of my vitamins and some protein, recovery drink that I've got down there.
He may be big at this point. He may be turning into like a super mouse.
If I turn on the TV and see a mouse swinging from the top of the Empire State, I'm not going to be surprised. I think he's chomped his way through 12 packets of GNC vitamins.
Good Lord. You may have to buy firearms or something.
I'm setting a big rat trap tonight. He's getting the full treatment.
You're going to wake up at like 3 a.m. to this huge snap, and then a bit of a scream, and then you're going to hear this little squeaky voice pulling it apart off of his Arnold Schwarzenegger neck and advancing on you in the dark, and you're going to like start freaking out.
I'm hoping to get this fixed soon because he's causing carnage. He's eating my motocross jerseys and anything he can set his eyes on. So I've got to get this fixed.
All right. Well, I hope that works out for you. What's another question. What's your training regimen right now? I'm surprised you're not in Valencia. There's a bunch of guys there right now.
Yeah, there's a superbike test going on at the minute, I think. But no, and for me, actually, just it's a little bit of everything. I'm mixing it up. I came back from Australia and New Zealand just before the Portimao test, 3 days before. So I've been out there mountain biking and kayaking and just generally staying busy for 12 hours a day. So it's I think I'm pretty much ahead of where I usually am at this time of year, so I feel quite good. So it's not too bad.
You did most of your training this last year in Southern California, hanging out with Josh Hayes and Melissa Paris.
Yep.
The weather was obviously stellar, as it always is here. And then you go home to the frozen tundra. That must have been a shock.
It is a little bit, yeah. It's, like I said, I've been in Australia since we had all that heavy snow hit the other week.
Yeah.
And now is one of the last little while is, the first bit of cold cycling that I've done since probably last February. So, I'm feeling it a little bit. I'm missing Southern California weather, that's for sure.
And I know they miss you too. I talked to Josh when he was at the Fontana test a few weeks ago, or a month or so ago. And I was actually giving grief. I said, you guys ever put together a video? You know what I'm talking about, the GarageBand gig.
Yes.
And he said, no, he's like, Chaz isn't here, and I guess Matt Lynn was the singer for the whole gig. Someday I'll get that bit up that I do with this review because it really was good. It's just the sound was kind of iffy. This one will be fine. All right.
Actually, I think Eugene was there last year. We were going to make a video, but we ended up going to, I think it's called Party something or other, one of the big places where they sell wigs and all that stuff, but they didn't have something quite good enough for what we needed. We want to make a real assault on this, so we're maybe when we all go back to Miller this summer, we'll get it done.
Well, and I hope to see you there. That was, I think, the last time we hung out face to face. So, Chaz, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure. And best of luck this season. I really think the Triumph has a good chance to see the box more than it did last year. And it looks like they're putting the resources behind it to do that. And, you know, World Supersport, for me at least, the last 3 or 4 seasons, has frankly been probably one of the best classes to watch because it is such a close battle all the time.
Yeah, no, it'll be a good year. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a very, very good season. And yeah, I'm just looking forward to getting stuck in and getting back on these European circuits again, and you know, having some good battles.
All right. Well, you have a go at it. Thanks a bunch, and we will talk to you soon. Hi, this is Jim Race for MotoGPOD, and I have on the line with me yet another racer interview with Rick Costello from London, who is not only a real roads racer, but a short circuit racer, which in a way is kind of strange. How are you doing, Maria?
Hello, I'm really good. It's good to speak to you, Jim.
Indeed. And you are based out of London, right?
I live about an hour above London, yeah. Okay. So not too far away.
And the work that you do, I kind of found fascinating, because you're sort of in the PR business, but you've also done a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, TV, magazine, kind of stunt doubling. Tell me about your day job that supports this obsession that we all have.
Yeah, I've done all sorts of stuff, but yeah, my day job is I'm a PR agent for mainly a company called Trophy UK, and of course it's bike related. I do the PR for 7 different motorcycle clothing and accessory brands, so it's all motorcycle related. One of the main brands is Bearing, and they're the leathers that I wear when I race, so the racing is tied in with my work, which is really cool. But yeah, that helps pay the bills and allows me to go racing. So yeah, and I actually really love my job. I love working with a journalist and getting product in the magazines and on celebrities and other racers. So it's a great job.
Yeah, it really does provide the opportunity to reach out, talk to people, make connections. And I mean, I think that's probably one of the coolest things that I enjoy about doing this, because you get to talk to so many different people.
Absolutely, yeah. Gosh, I'm always meeting new people on a daily basis almost. So, yeah, what with all the different events that I attend and race meetings and whatever else, yeah, it's really cool.
So. One of the things that I want to get out of the way, because I was walking through your pictures, and I saw this picture of you receiving MBE from Prince Charles. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, last year, totally out of the blue, I had a letter arrive from Buckingham Palace asking me if I'd like to accept the honour of receiving an MBE, becoming a member of the British Empire. And I was absolutely blown away by it. I didn't believe it was true. And then in November, I actually got to go to Buckingham Palace and receive my gong. I did almost miss my appointment with Prince Charles because we got stuck in traffic on the way there, despite giving ourselves like 3 hours to get there. And I ended up having to get a friend of mine who works for Virgin Limo Bike to actually come and scoop me up from the side of the road, leave my parents and sister in the car, and I got whisked away on the back of a motorbike to Buckingham Palace to arrive in time. The good news is that thankfully my parents did arrive, thanks to the policemen that were on the working at Buckingham Palace. They were fantastic, and they managed to get them in despite them being late, and they got to see me receive my MBE. And yeah, what an amazing day!
One of the things about that whole story that kind of cracked me up was you were in your finest garb in order to stand before the prince, and there you are in the back of some bike getting scooted in, and I pictured that in my mind. I'm like, that must have been quite a scene.
Tell me about it. Yeah, I mean, I rarely wear skirts and dresses, but obviously for that day, you know, I had a little black dress on, and yeah, heels, the works, you know. And so yeah, it wasn't, thankfully you wear an apron on the back of the bike, so my modesty was covered up. It's all fine. But yeah, gosh, I mean, when I arrived there, and I, because I thought I was going to be late, I didn't care. I wouldn't have cared if I'd turned up in pink pajamas, you know. I just was so glad that I'd arrived because it was such an important day to me. But, yeah, I managed to sort of straighten myself up before I had to meet the prince.
I bet, yeah. Any time you have an appointment of importance and you realize that there may be an opportunity to be late and panic sets in, it's like, do whatever you can to make it happen.
Yeah, it was, well, I think it was more traumatic for my parents because... obviously, my it was a big day for them, and my mum had been really looking forward to it. So, when she didn't think she was going to make it, I think there were a few tears. But like I say, it was a happy ending, and what a story! What a story! To be nearly late for the palace, and have to arrive on a motorbike.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I can also see Prince Charles there looking at his watch, going, "Hmm."
Well, the first question he asked me was, did you arrive by motorbike? To which I replied, yes, actually I did, and I told him a bit of the story. So, and there's a great photograph of us laughing together, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and I'm going to have some more questions from you or for you about your photos. Well, let me jump into that right now because I actually found it really interesting, and then I'll step back a little bit. But I was looking through the pictures of you racing, and I saw just a huge array of different bikes. Okay, so here's the ones that came to mind. I jotted them down. I think I saw a ZX6R. I saw a Triumph 675. I saw either an RVF 400 or a VFR 400, and which is, those bikes are essentially sex on wheels. I saw a Thruxton Cup bike, and I saw some old vintage Kawi, maybe like an H1R, that was listed as an Offenstadt, and I didn't have a chance.
Yeah.
When you were at Spa, you've been on a whole bunch of different wheels.
And that was just last year. No, I think I rode 7 different bikes last year. I mean, it wasn't ideal. It wasn't conducive to me going fast, really, because I didn't get on a fast bike until the Manx Grand Prix last year. And I've ridden lots of stuff in my career, but particularly last year, I rode so much different stuff. Like you say, there was the Offenstadt, which was the most peculiar bike I've ever ridden, I think. It had a Z900 tuned to 1000 engine in it. Yes, it needed a bit more development, really, before we actually got to race it at Spa. We found quite a few problems with it, but what a fantastic weekend. And to race around Spa was really special. I think I rode a Norton Domi racer at the Goodwood Revival meeting, which is
fun.
An amazing event. Yeah, that was another highlight of the year. So, yeah, I've ridden all sorts, haven't I?
Do you have a favorite? Like I said, the VFR for me is...
Well, the RVF, that's actually my bike.
Okay.
And I'll never sell it. And, they're just gorgeous pieces of kit, aren't they? So it's just a little 400, but it's very similar to the one that I achieved my podium at the Manx on. So, yeah, I'll never sell that. I'll never sell that bike.
Okay, so a perfect segue. You do, as I mentioned before, you know, with the exception of guys, for example, like, you know, Steve Plater, you do both short circuit and real roads. I didn't know until you said that you've put in the Manx, but you've got a super busy schedule is coming up. You've got 15 races.
Tell me about it. I know. I'm very excited about this year. I'm part of a team called CSC Racing, and yeah, we've got a full-on schedule. My teammate Davey Morgan is predominantly a road racer, and so I'm going to be doing a lot more. He's Irish as well. We're going to be doing a lot more road racing in Ireland this year, so I'll be at a lot of new tracks, a lot of new road circuits. But yeah, we're both going to do some short circuit racing. Short circuit racing is where I started. I love short circuit racing. It's just hard for me to find the budget to do a full season of that. I managed to be able to get support for my road racing, and hopefully in the future, you know, I can go back to short circuits as well and do a full season.
So might as well take this opportunity. Tell me who your sponsors are.
Oh, wow. I've got quite a few. The main ones, obviously, CSC Branson, the team that I'm going to be riding for. One of my personal sponsors is CMS. I've picked up a new sponsor called Holtage. That guy actually owns a massive collection of Suzuki race bikes, you know, sort of like Barry Sheen era. And I'm going to be racing one of his Suzuki XR69s at the Manx Grand Prix. So that's another very different bike that I'm going to be riding. Lots of product support, Arai helmets, NGK spark plugs, Rock Oil, Hell brake lines, Nox body armour, obviously bearing leathers, EBC brakes, Stomp grip. God, the list is quite long. I even use spider grips. I think they come from America.
Yep.
Skidmarks fairings. I've got some great support. Oh, Chicken Hawk's tire warmers. I think they're from America as well.
They are indeed. Very cool. And you know what? you have to have that kind of support, especially if you're putting on a season like you're doing. Because, you know, I said 15 races, but it looks like at many of these weekends, or you know, even the Fortnite, for example, you're running in three or four classes,
and yeah.
there's no way you can do that by yourself.
No, and to be honest, that list is like plan A. That's ideally what we want to do and what I want to do, but I don't have all the funds in place yet. We've kind of split the season and we're going to make sure that we do everything up to the TT, and then obviously the Manx is an important one, and the other stuff in between, I've just got to keep working on trying to get sponsors on board, you know, money sponsors really, to enable me to do that. I mean, I put everything that I have into my racing because I love my racing, and what else would I want to spend my money on? But yeah, I don't earn enough to do all of that, so I'm really great. I am very fortunate, I know, and hopefully I can pull in some more sponsors this year to make it all happen.
I am the same way, and I understand the dedication to it, and also the difficulty of it. But it sounds like you really have a good sponsorship package going, so keep at it. I wanted to ask you about, so there are basically three races on your list this year, and three that I kind of think of as the mecca of real roads racing. And
yeah.
That is, of course, the Northwest 200, the Isle of Man TT, and Manx. You know, I Cookstown and Tangerine as well. But those three, to me, stick out. Tell me about your experiences there in the past.
Yeah, wow. I've been racing at the Isle of Man for quite a while. I started at the Manx Grand Prix and went on to then do the TT. You used to be able to do the Manx Grand Prix and the production races at the TT. So I started doing that. And back in 2004, I became the fastest woman to lap the TT course. I'd actually broken my collarbone just 3 weeks before and didn't know whether I was going to be able to make it, but we thought it was healing, and I went and raced and got the record. I actually got the record on my standing start lap of the Production 1000 race.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive. And
the thing is, it was a good thing that I did it on the first lap, because I got black flagged on the second lap and I had to pull out of the race because part of my bike was hanging off, which really wasn't good, and they wouldn't let, you know, even if I'd fixed it on the side of the road, they wouldn't let me finish the race. So they basically sent me back on the coast road back to the paddock, because otherwise I would have been sat there all day while all the races were going on. Got back into the paddock, and the guy who'd organised the Paget Suzuki 750 for me was running up to me with a big smile on his face, and I'm thinking, why is he smiling? I'm not happy. And he was like, you've done it. And I'd broken the female lap record, so, which I then held, I think it was 4 years up until last year. So, that was really special to me. And then the year after that, in 2005, I I was at the Manx Grand Prix competing in the ultralightweight race on an RVF 400, and I finished third in class and got on the podium, first woman to get on the podium. This year, actually, another female, Carolyn Sells, won that race, which was absolutely fantastic. So the girls are doing good on the Isle of Man.
You know, I'm bummed, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there is no longer, there is no longer 400 class, or nor 125s or 250s in the Isle of Man TT. And, you know, that, to me, that was big tradition.
I know. It is, yeah, that's right. They're no longer there. It's just super bike, super stock, super sport at the TT now. As well as the electric bike race. So, yeah, there's a lot of sort of, the machinery is a lot of the, you see a lot of the same stuff flying past you if you're watching, but, which is a shame because it used to have such a great, vast array of bikes there. The 125 and 250 classes have now kind of been moved to the 700 race, so that happens on another road race course on the Isle of Man, but it's not part of the TT.
Yeah, and you know, as somebody who races the smaller bike classes, because that's just what I like.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to see the two strokes go away or the 400s, and you know, even though they're really not being made very much anymore.
It's
near and dear to my heart.
I'm sure that there's enough people that think the same. And, you know, they will be around for a lot longer. But, it's like you say, because they're not being made anymore, people are looking for alternatives. So that's where the SV650s really come in and sort of is being pushed forward on the road circuits as well. I rode one in Ireland last year and it was good. But all the time I was thinking, I wish I had my RVF here.
Well, you know, it's funny because over here, those two do battle against each other in what we call Formula 4. And we've got RBFs over here that are putting out like 90 real horsepower that are just
wow.
Built.
I want to go on one of those.
Well, the thing is they don't always go very long.
I'm sure.
But when they do, they're just fantastic. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question that, you know, you probably get asked all the time, and I'm like, should I ask you? I'm like, no. What is it like being a woman in what has traditionally been a man's sport? It must have been kind of hard to break into.
Well, you know, I've always been a woman, so I don't know what it's like to be a man in this sport, but that's my cheeky reply. Yeah, of course. It's a tough sport anyway for the guys, and I'm not going to say it's easier being a girl because it definitely isn't. Lots of, you know, gender stereotyping, lots of barriers that have just been there for years and years and years because it's always been a guy's thing. So I kind of ignored a lot of that and I just had my heart set on racing motorbikes, and that's it. That's what I was going to do. I thought I had a bit of a point to prove, I think, when I first started, and you know, it was all about showing that, you know, a woman could do good, and yeah. But my attitude's kind of changed, you know, and I love being part of the sport. I always kind of wanted to be just another competitor, just another one of the guys, but having raced for so long, it doesn't work like that. I'm female and I'm always going to be different, and I'm definitely more accepted than I ever was, you know, and I've earned a bit of respect and stuff, and it works for me. I think it takes a certain type of woman to get involved in this sport. You've got to be pretty tough.
That final sentence was exactly true. And frankly, the fact that there are women like you, and we've got a few over here in the States as well, that stick at it and keep doing it, it seems to me are making it more and more not only accessible, but attractive for women to join in the sport and see that it's doable. So more power to you.
Thank you. That's another thing, you know, when obviously I've had a few injuries and accidents, and people would instantly say, oh, well, you're going to give up then. And I was like, well, no, my fellow racers don't give up when they're injured. They just get fixed and get back on the bike. And that's exactly what I did. So, yeah, I love it. I'm not giving up for a while.
We'll keep going. Just a quick thank you to Ali Martinez for setting up the talk we're having here. I noticed on your website that your copyright is 2003. So you've been online for quite some time, haven't you?
Gosh, that is a long time. Yeah. That website that's up at the moment was built by a guy. I've met him since, but when we first set it up, we did it all online through emails, and yeah, I'm having a new one built at the moment, but that one's kind of, yeah. I've been around a long time.
Yeah, trust me, I feel the same way. tell me about your sort of stunt double work.
Oh yeah, that was amazing. I actually did some sort of doubling work for an ITV drama, sort of terrestrial TV drama, and I was riding my mountain bike. I used to do talks for Sport England and met some guys that do BMXing and mountain bike stunts and stuff, and just got chatting and told them, you know, they're like interested in what sort of cycling I was up to. Anyway, then I got a phone call from them and they were like, we need a girl to be involved in this TV program that we're going to be working in. So I doubled for an actress called Tamsin Althwaite just on my mountain bike. During the filming, they actually had to use a proper qualified stunt woman to do the actual fall, which I could have done quite easily, but for insurance purposes, you have to have a proper stunt woman. And she was fantastic. She really looked after me, and we had a really great conversation. And it was a few months later, she actually got asked to do some rider doubling on a motorbike for a movie, but she didn't have a road license, but she suggested me, which was absolutely fantastic. She said, she was like, oh, I know just the girl for the job. And this stunt coordinator rang me out of the blue. He didn't know who I was. I didn't know who he was, but he was like, would you be interested? To which I was like, of course. And then he was like, well, we need to see some photographs of you because the actress needs to say that you're okay for the job.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, well, I do have a website. You can go on there. And he was like, okay, that's great. And he's like, but you can definitely ride a motorbike, can't you? And I was like, yeah, yeah. And he's, you've definitely got a license. I went, yeah, yeah. Anyway, so half an hour later, after he'd been on my website, he rang me back. He said, I am so embarrassed. You can ride a motorbike. He said, you're going to love this job. It's going to be so easy. And all I had to do was ride a Vespa. And I think it was like 3 days filming in London. I had my own trailer and makeup artist and everything. It was amazing. And got to meet Reese Witherspoon and Christina Ricci, who I took on the back of the scooter, and the whole crew were amazing. It was great. Amazing experience. And the pay is very good. I'd like more of that work.
Oh, okay. I heard you mention earlier that you'd been doing some radio work.
Yes, just local stuff from the local BBC radio station here in Northampton. They have a sports night every Monday evening, and I got to guest present on there, and I absolutely loved it. I'd definitely like to do more work in radio, and yeah, I've been in quite a few times since, and yeah, I really enjoy it.
Cool. Well, I think I am at the end of my list of questions. I thank you very much for taking time to talk to MotoGPOD. And I'm still staring at your schedule going, I have no idea how she's going to get through that. Hey, so you were doing Thruxton Cup races?
No, I think those pictures will have been Goodwood Revival.
Oh, okay. So that might have been the Norton. Well, anyway, have yourself a great season. Maybe sometime during the year we can, you know, usually around the TT time is when I really focus on that side of folks, and we get a decent amount of people on here. But our listeners are going to love hearing from you, and I just want to wish you the best of luck this year.
Well, thank you very much, Jim. It's been a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so we're back, and I hope you guys enjoyed those. Both of them were very fun to talk to. Chaz will be has agreed to join us, much like we've been doing with the Eugene Laverty interviews all year, so that'll be cool. Maria has agreed to talk to us just prior to the Isle of Man TT, because as you guys remember from last year, when I talked to Sean Harris, it's always fun to kind of, you know, get your pulse on the people that are at the island. Hopefully, you know, I'll have a little bit more of a closer connection to some of the people there when that comes around. But I hope you guys enjoyed it. Looking forward, and there's this feeling in the air right now. Things are heating up, and you know, my feet are bouncing. I'm really excited. We are getting close. So, you know, if we had the Urda Jerez test, I would just be over the moon. But we don't this year. But let's go. And so, thanks a bunch, and we will talk to you soon.
Ciao.
MotoGP is a trademark of Dorner Sports SL. The MotoGP OD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorner Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGP OD isn't affiliated with any of them.